I hope you're not burning down the house. You could probably fix it up. You don't have to get that drastic. That's why we invite the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, to join us once a month to take your calls or to answer your questions if you leave them on our show page at WNYC.org. Our number here is 646-829-3985. Or as I said, you can go to our show page on our website at WNYC.org and leave a comment. Right now, I also should mention that the Gurus of How To is one of your names. The other name is Accurate Building Inspectors.
So they
Brooklyn,
tell me.
New York.
I think so.
Well, that's the one that you actually make a living as?
That's our day job.
Let's say we're trying to make a living.
I think he's such a Debbie Downer.
Well, I just had a guest who's had an engineer come in to look at her building. And so she did the right thing. She had an engineer come in to look before she bought her co-op. Mm-hmm. And he said it's in pretty good shape considering how old it is, 1840.
Mm-hmm.
And then the building developed a crack, and they had to evacuate. So are some things impossible to figure out when you look at a building, or is that just a lousy inspector?
I'm not going to comment on whether he's a lousy inspector or not, but well, that sounds so political. Maybe he was a lousy inspector, but the reality is of the kinds of buildings that she was talking about, which we do a lot of inspections of, are these townhouse brownstone row buildings, where some of the issues that I was listening to was that adjacent property construction could horribly affect a building. Now the New York City Department of Buildings has a completely separate division on adjacent property construction, foundation and pile driving division.
Underpinning,
that's it. An underpinning division just because there have been so many problems.
So when they were building row houses in the 1840s, mm-hmm. They were building them with one wall between the adjoining houses?
Well, that party wall, that's called a party wall, where that wall really doesn't belong to anyone totally. It belongs to both parties.
Now I'm afraid to hang pictures.
Well, you're allowed.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that the technology that we use now when we build – we still build buildings with party walls. The difference is the foundations are poured concrete with rebar in it with a concrete foundation on top of it. Back then, the footing of the foundation was just big rocks we placed in the ground. And then we just put more rocks on top of that. And so there really is no monolithic mechanism or mechanical mechanism that holds it all together. And that's part of the problems. And also vibration. And also the lime mortar has fallen out between the stones.
Yeah, doesn't have too much longevity to it.
One funny story is that I had a client, shows you how thin these walls are. These party walls are only usually 2 width of brick thick. So a client of mine was cleaning out her fireplace and there was a loose brick and she pulled it out. And on the other side of the loose brick was wallpaper. from the adjacent house, so she slowly pushed
now
it back.
Now we know whether it's called a party wall. You can actually party with your neighbors.
Yeah, exactly.
No question about that. But the idea is, Larry just mentioned about a footing. In order for the people to understand what a footing is, it's really like having the house stand on snowshoes. In other words, you make it very wide at the bottom so you get more bearing and so that it could support the whole wall that's going to be placed on top of it. That's the technology of today. And it's a technology going back to about the even before they built row houses, but there were no laws or rules or everything else. So mm-hmm. just builders came in and built whatever they wanted to.
But those are the houses people want to live in.
Yes, yeah. Those are the build. The major building code came into being about 1916, and then everybody started to comply to quality construction.
I'm going to do a station ID now. And then we can address the quiz that you bring in each month, and we'll take some calls. Does that sound like
absolutely.
A plan?
Absolutely. I'm in agreement with you.
I like it. A man with a plan.
Yes.
Let me begin by saying my guests are the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, the Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And our number here is 646-829-3985. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So who's going to – Al?
Well, I can handle this.
Because I think Larry and I have been hogging the reading of this for a while.
Are you keeping a record of this?
I am. I try to be as fair as possible.
Yes. Actually, I'm writing a press release because we're 50 years in business, and I call you the referee between Larry and myself. You know. Anyway, this is the word you got to figure out. Name the heavy decorative wooden support blocks located on the top of supporting posts of structures that are architecturally influenced by the Americas colonial Spanish. This is like you got to look at this is like the capital of a column, but it is you find this on a hacienda someplace in maybe South Texas or New Mexico or in Guatemala or something like
this
that.
This is where the latillas and the what are the other things they all rest on these things,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And this little and fortunately that. Lenny has a picture in front of him. He knows what it looks like.
But I've also spent a lot of time in the Southwest, so I like that architecture.
Oh, yeah, I think it's unique. It's very rustic. It has a human flavor to it. I like Roman and Greek architecture also because it's so pure and beautiful.
To some degree, this is like a variant on Roman and Greek architecture.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you know the answer, our number here is 646-829-3985. You can't write in a comment for that. You have to call in if you want to try to answer the quiz. But you can write in for with any other question. And should I just read a couple before we go
sure.
to the calls?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Rochelle on the Jersey Shore.
He's asking our permission. Go ahead.
I think it's courteous. Rochelle on the Jersey Shore says, last night I was turning off a hall light. I moved the switch unusually slow and caused an electrical buzz. I think we've all had that experience at some point or another. There was a slight burn smell. Of course, this freaked me out, so I removed the switch plate to see if the house was on fire inside the wall. It wasn't. But should I be concerned? Should I replace the switch?
Yes, you should replace the switch.
But, and should she do it herself, she says, or? Well,
she can. I'll tell you something. If you go to our website on how to replace a light switch, it tells you exactly how to do it, and it's not that complicated. But you have to shut off the electricity from the main circuit breaker if you're going to work on that. As far as the buzz is concerned, what happened is old switches are what they call knife switches. And the blade that makes the connection goes into a slot like two little pillars. And what happens is that gets arced after many years. And then what happens if you move it slowly into it, then it's just slightly touching it, and it don't get good connection, and it starts to buzz out. And you're actually by the old toggle switches that it's called. A toggle switch goes up and down. If you do it slowly, you'll burn those switches out.
Start a fire with it?
I don't think so. It depends upon whether it is in a metal container or gem box or 1900 box, something that's metallic and covering the whole thing. It's not generally dangerous. It's just not appropriate, and you have a problem with that. And then what happens?
But it's giving you fair warning that there's an indication that this has become old and worn, and it's time to replace it. People are really – I get this a lot, that people are under the – illusion that a lot of building materials are forever. Let me newsflash. No building materials are forever. Everything wears out. Everything breaks down from steel girders to concrete to slate roofs.
Happening to me right now.
I disagree.
I know you do. So tell me what doesn't wear out.
Well,
name one thing.
The pyramids.
They're more.
They're not in as good shape.
In good shape as when they were built, and eventually they will be gone.
But there are parts of it that are still good. The Parthenon. And
let me ask you another question. You want to live in the pyramids?
No.
Oh, why not?
They're very drafty.
That's for dead people.
Let's take some calls. Okay.
You know what? Thanks for being supportive.
Hi, Assad from Queens. You're on the air.
Assad.
Assad, I think you have to turn off your radio and listen to the phone.
Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I live in an old colonial house that was built probably more than 150 years old.
Uh-huh.
And in the winter, it's quite drafty. I want to know what's the most price-effective way I can seal the windows and other things that can reduce that. My house is about 3,500 square feet. It's a big colonial.
Well, the first thing I would do is I would check the caulking around all the windows and all the door frames. That's the first thing I would do. As far as the draftiness inside, you also have to look at what kind of windows you have. Are the windows themselves rattling in the sashes? Are they single glazed windows, or are they double glazed windows, or are they single glazed with a storm window? So a lot of these things where you can actually physically see the windows rattle, that is a good place to start.
But shouldn't we assume that any old building is going to have a certain amount of draftiness?
Yes, because a lot of them do not have insulation in the walls. Not that insulation. By the way, there is a misnomer that insulation stops air currents. It doesn't. It actually acts more like a filter. So you'll see all the dirt stuck in. People will stuff insulation in to try to clog up leaks, and it doesn't work. It's a thermal barrier, but it's certainly not a air barrier. And so if there is that case, part of the problems could also be putting insulating units on the outlets and the switches on the exterior walls. That will help also. But the third is actually to try to insulate those exterior walls if that's available to you, but that tends to be very costly.
But also another thing is if you have cracks or door frames or something like that, or the wall molding that is lifted up, you have to fill that in, and you could use that styrofoam kind of aerosol cans to fill it underneath
the expanding foam.
The expanding foam, and then what you do is quickly, before it really gets good and hard, you just take a knife and cut it out to make a nice, neat job so it doesn't look like looks like whipped cream.
Like something is oozing out of the wall.
Right, that's right. So the idea is, what you can do is if you can buy a smoke candle or something like that and go around the house and see which way the smoke is going, that'll tell you where all the cracks are and where the air leaks are. You use it all the time.
I use it to try to keep the squirrels out of my house.
Okay, Asad, that's a lot of information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a listener with a question that I know will be near and dear to your heart because it's about window guards.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron in Brooklyn says, we live in a brick townhouse. My husband has been trying to install window guards on the second floor windows, but we can't get the drill to go in more than 1 inch. Once it's in that far, smoke starts to shoot out from the hole. How do we know whether we're hitting brick or metal? And would a masonry bit help?
Well, a masonry bit would help. There are some.
Well, if they are drilling into brick or concrete or any kind of masonry, they must use a masonry bit.
There is no way a regular drill is going to work
right.
That.
Yeah, but what about that smoke? Is that
that's from the dust? The bit is heating up. And what happens is it heats up. It's almost like the Indians and a bow and arrow and a spindle. You keep turning it into the wood, and it starts, sparks come out. Well, then now you're using an electric drill, so it's much more active, and you get a lot more friction, and you'll get a lot more heat, and that's what the smoke is. You got to use a masonry bit, and you drill in, and then you got to use either a special plug or a lead plug to go in where the screw is. And the best thing to use is the one-way screws that cannot be removed after you put the window, after you put the guard in. By the way, those guards are really very important. Even if it is not dictated by the local code for your building, whether it's a one or two family house, if you have children in your house, you got to put on those window guards, because children are naturally curious creatures, and if you leave the window open a little bit, you're looking for problems.
But I also want to say that if they're drilling into this brickwork and they're going in at least an inch, that would be enough bearing to hold that in place if the screw is able to be made nice and tight by putting in one of those anchors or shields into the hole that they just drilled.
So an inch is okay.
An inch is okay. Especially if they're putting in three screws on each side.
Yes, the three screws, and also you got to test it, that when the window is wide open with the garden, there should be no more than 4 inches opening in any direction of that window guard. And buy only the window guards that are approved. Don't buy something that came from God knows where. Buy something that is approved, because it's a one-time investment. it's a good investment to make.
We have to go take a little break, but a reminder that the quiz is name the heavy decorative wooden support blocks located on top of supporting posts of structures that are architecturally influenced by the colonial Spanish history of in the Americas. And we'll be right back with the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, right after this. Our number is 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org.
You've been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine? You've been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine?
And we're back with the gurus of how to, Alan, Larry, Ubell. I'm taking your calls at 646-829-3985. And we're going to go right to as many calls as we can fit in here, beginning with Gordon from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a brownstone in Midtown, and we have some stains on the hardwood floors that I think are basically water stains from plants that overflowed and things like that during the winter that we bring in from the garden.
Are these stains blackish in color?
Yeah, they're deep brown.
Yeah, deep brown. That means you have oak floors.
Yeah.
Right. Go on.
And I'm just wondering how you can get them out. I've tried things like putting cleanser on and, you know, with a bleach component and working that in and leaving liquid bleach on there with a paper towel and trying to bleach it out. And I wonder if there's if there are other ways to do this.
First of all, the reason the bleach is probably not working because there's a finish on top of that black that has captured that black discoloration.
I did sand it first.
You gotta really not only sand it, but you gotta really take down all of the finish that is on top of that black spot, and then take raw bleach right out of the bottle and just brush it right over that spot, leave it alone, let it dry, and you'll see that it'll come white again. Then what happened is, because the bleach has a water content to it, it'll raise the grain a little bit and then very lightly sandpaper over it and then take a little polyurethane, two coats, right over that spot, and the stain will disappear. The stain will be gone.
Okay, Gordon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. A listener writes in, I use distilled white vinegar to remove sweat stains from my laundry. Am I damaging my washing machine by doing this?
No, I don't think so.
Not at all. I mean,
and does it matter whether I pour the vinegar into the wash as opposed to pouring it directly on? Oh, I wouldn't put it on an item of clothing vinegar is an acid, isn't it?
Well, hold on. I want to talk now. But the thing is, what person's asking is about the wash machine, so let's not lose focus. Is if you put bleach in a wash machine, way more caustic than anything that we actually ingest into our bodies. So, no, it's not going to do any damage. Mm-hmm.
But you should put it in with the water and the soap before you put the clothes in. Let it dilute.
I wouldn't pour it in direct.
And if you're using vinegar, lettuce and tomatoes in there would be good, too.
Yes, great.
Okay, Al, you did get that joke in. Danielle.
Which we all waited for.
Danielle asks, what do we need to do to window ACs besides cleaning the filters? Every year around now, I get flyers from companies for spring cleaning, that is vacuuming coils, oiling motors, sealing air leaks. Is this really necessary?
No, it's not. The best thing to do is, aside from cleaning the filter, is and any dishwasher detergent, any shampoo, any kind of soap that you have will work. Even soft soap for hands will work fine. The other thing is, the back of the unit has an accumulation of dirt, and if it's possible to drag that thing in and get it into a bathtub or into a yard or on the roof or something where you could spray off those coils, that would be perfect. But, you know, normally speaking, the way they're supposed to work is that the rain itself is supposed to be self-cleaning of these units also when they're hanging outside of a building. But an interesting study that came up about that almost 30 to 40% of window air conditioning units' cooling power is lost through leaks around the air conditioner. So the best thing you can do to try to seal up those gaps, and don't forget the gap where the two window sashes overlap, because that's basically a direct hole between the interior and the outer and the exterior of the building or the room. So make sure you get those all closed up also. Try to save. And the better you do, the more money you'll save on your cooling bill.
Yeah, that's the same thing as the gentleman that came in that he has drafts in his house. If you have drafts, you're losing the heat, or you're losing your air conditioning. Mm-hmm. The idea is to reduce the amount of drafts in the building as much as you can, mm-hmm. and you will save energy.
Well, we don't have a draft in this country anymore.
Yes. Right.
Alan
yes.
from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah. Great. I have a question about storage sheds that you can put in your backyard.
Yes.
Now, I understand there's a legal limit and before you have to start getting permits to in terms of the size of the shed you can put.
That's correct, which is different depending on the municipality that you're in.
Are you the gentleman that sent us an email on that?
I did.
You did. I have it. I was researching it. There is a regulation of how big it can be, but I haven't found it yet. And when I go to the next AIA meeting, American Institute of Architects meeting, I will ask some of my colleagues on what the regulation is.
And also part of the regulations are also how close they can be to the property line. That's also part of it. So there's a couple of things.
So you'll get back to this gentleman.
Mm. Yes, I have his email. It's in my computer, and I will respond.
This is obviously proof that you actually read the things that people
write.
Some of them.
Like I got a photograph the other day of a big piece of plaster ceiling that fell off while they were out and about. They said, oh, thank God we weren't having dinner at that time because you can see the dining room table is covered with blocks of plaster.
That interested you.
And I also want to let the people out there know that I'm not a therapist. Don't tell me about your husband or your wives or your girlfriends.
Yeah, a lot of the letters start off, well, now that I'm divorced.
Donald. Are you still married, Donald?
I'm still married. But
Wayne, New Jersey.
I'm still married.
Go ahead.
This problem came about because my wife asked me to paint our stoop, but we'll stay married over
it. Okay, but what's going on?
So here's the thing. I got a cement stoop. I've painted it 3 times, and with the right type of paint, paint for retaining walls, you know, that's supposed to be
yes.
resistant to moisture. Each time I painted it, the paint peeled.
Yes.
I had a contractor come in about 2 years ago, and he claimed that he'd be able to fix it. He chipped away at it, removed all the loose stuff, recoated the face of the cement with cement that he had tinted white.
Right.
And now it's cracking. If I hit it even lightly, I could chip away at the thin surface that he applied.
Right.
What do I do?
First of all, I want to answer this question not only for you, and thank you for the question, but I want to let everybody know who has front steps and stoops and stuff like that are made out of concrete. Don't paint them. Clean them. That's the wash them, scrub them, but don't paint them. When you paint a masonry steps, you're reducing the frictional resistance of those steps, and you could cause a mishap. By painting the steps, you're doing a thing that the lawyers call cause and create. You're cause and creating a condition where somebody will slip and fall, and that will be the prima facie for a lawsuit against you.
Okay, and the other thing that's going on here, which is more, I think, what you're interested in, is that what happens is when you coat something like masonry with paint, what happens is it traps the moisture below it, and then that moisture freezes in the wintertime because that is not a heated element. So it causes erosion. So you're actually creating more of a problem. What he also did
I could interrupt for a second.
But hold on, I'm getting to your point. He also recoated it with so he repointed some of the mortar joints or some of the cracks. And the problem with that is that, of course, it's going to crack off because concrete really only holds together when it's at least 4 inches thick because it needs mass in order to hold. Because remember, what concrete is dehydrated rock. So we've taken the matrix of the rock, destroyed it by dehydrating it, and now we're reconstituting it again. So it needs more mass to hold together. So by just putting thin coats on things, they never hold together. Now what were you going to say?
I was going to say that I didn't explain properly. It's a cement wall that makes up part of my stoop. It's not the actual steps.
But is it part of the building or is it part of the steps?
It's part of the stoop, but it's a vertical wall. I didn't paint the steps.
Yeah, and you keep painting the side of it, and the paint keeps peeling off, and the erosion keeps, because moisture is coming up from underneath the steps.
So obviously he needs to do something.
What
there.
I would try
can
to
do. Can he stain it? Can he do something else?
No, what I would do is I would actually
sandblast it.
No, or
clean it.
Or steam off all the old paint and just repoint and repair as necessary. Again, not knowing what I'm looking at here and exactly what the condition is, it's hard to come up with an actual.
Well, there is a material. If it's a vertical wall, there's a material called ThoroSeal. I'm not sponsoring their company.
Well, you know that. Go on.
But the beautiful part about it is that this is a breathable material. It's made for masonry in order to permit the concrete and masonry to breathe when it does get wet. And it gets wet not only from the rain, but from the relative humidity changes in the atmosphere. So these are the kinds of problems. My feeling is, like it happens all over the city of New York, people painting the outside of their buildings and doing all kinds of things, they're not only destroying the brickwork, but they're also changing the architectural ambiance of the city of New York.
So Donald, thank you for your call. We have only gotten one attempt, one stab at an answer for this quiz.
Let him have it.
So let's see how Phoebe will do. Phoebe from Manhattan, what do you think it is? Oh, should I ask the question again? Name the heavy decorative wooden support blocks located on the top of supporting posts of structures that are architecturally influenced by the America's colonial Spanish tradition.
Hi, are you talking about the vigas?
No, it's not a viga. It's not a latilla. Those are definitely there in those buildings.
That's absolutely right.
Yes.
But this is not it. This is the thing that supports the column itself.
It makes the top of the column bigger so it spreads out the load to the column.
It's the
capital of the column.
In other words, you have a narrow column and you have a wide upper face in order to give it more bearing and to actually distribute the load more.
Well, it's okay. Karen in Brooklyn says, I live near the BQE in a great neighborhood, and when the weather gets nice, I like to open my windows. Unfortunately, when I do that, there's a layer of soot and grime that's left on my floor and walls and the air, which affects my breathing. Is there anything I can do barring moving to the Scottish Highlands, she says. doesn't always want to use the AC.
Well, there are filters that can be purchased to take some of the particulate matter out of the room and everything else. But the ones that are really working very well are the electronic filter type, and they take out about 98% of the particulate matter in the atmosphere.
So she's going to have to run a machine no matter what.
They're expensive.
But the other thing I would recommend is actually make sure that she has screens in place, because I do notice that the screens for the windows that I do open and close in my own home get dirty very quickly, so they're obviously catching a lot of the dirt, and then I just clean those out once every couple of months.
Oh, great.
So that's actually, screens are also act as filters.
There are a couple kinds of screens, one with very large openings and one with very, 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 very tiny.
Very, very fine openings.
Very fine
Chris
openings.
Chris from Madison, New Jersey, you think you know the answer?
Yes.
What is it?
Corbels.
No,
it's not a It actually is a corbelling piece. In other words, it's a projection that comes out from the column, and that the term corbelling means to project out.
Can I make a prediction? We're going to be doing this again next month.
I think so too.
Okay. Let's take a call from Aaron, Jersey City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a brownstone and a rental unit, which I completely renovated last year, including the bathroom. So it's got all new plumbing, new walls, et cetera. And my tenant told me last week that there's all kinds of mold appearing. And I went downstairs and I looked at the unit or at the walls, and there's some blackish stuff sort of around the vanity. And then in a room abutting the bathroom in a laundry room, there's also some mold appearing sort of on the other side of the wall where there's a shower. So I'm wondering, could this be related, first of all, to something inside the wall, like the plumbing, or is this a matter of the air being too humid and ventilation?
Let me ask you a couple questions, this is not uncommon. First of all, is there a ventilator in the bathroom?
There is. There's one of these ceiling fans.
But do they operate it ever?
Well, as I was, waiting to talk to you guys, I was thinking, maybe I should just, sure that they're using it all the time.
Let me ask you another question.
Yeah.
Is that in the laundry area that's adjacent, is there a vent in there for the dryer? And is the dryer venting?
I believe, but I got to double check.
If the dryer is venting directly into the room and there's no ventilation in the bathroom, you're just bringing all this moisture from the bathroom and from the dryer and just depositing it into this apartment, and that's could be causing the mold problem.
So it also should check whether they're actually doing things to vent.
And the third thing is the shower bottom, if there was a shower, could be leaking into the wall, and that could be another problem. That's going to take a little bit more investigation.
And the other thing that could be happening, when they put the piping together, they didn't insulate. They insulated the hot water pipe, but they didn't insulate the cold water pipe. And what happens is condensation forms on those cold water pipes, and that also causes mold. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's putting in new piping, you have to insulate both the hot and cold water pipes to prevent mold growth.
We're very close to being out of time, and we got lots of calls. So if people who can't get through to us have an emergency, Larry, they can get through to you, and what do they have to do?
They can write me at larry@accuratebuilding.com or larry@ubell.com, or they can follow me at Twitter, at Larry Ubell at Twitter, or they can also look on our page.
Now, I said we have very little time. 10 seconds. Maryland, Brooklyn. Many apartments in my 7-story co-op in Brooklyn want to replace their windows, and the question about vinyl windows has come up from the shareholders that want windows that are more energy efficient. Are vinyl windows allowed in 7-story buildings? And if not, what are the most energy efficient windows allowed in?
They are not allowed.
Okay, but aluminum double-hung windows are actually very good, but you have to make sure, which it's hard to find one without one, but that they have to have thermal breaks in them. And that's what insulates the outside metal from the inside metal, so you don't get heat transfer.
And you will be back on June 8th. Did you know that?
June 8th? No, but it's nice to know.
And we'll be asking the quiz again.
Right.
At that time. And people should check it out, yeah.
And again, we will go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
And thank you both so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.